Hey everyone, thank you for joining me for another week of Scouted Shenanigans. Steve and Phil are on the show this week to chat to me about an entire country losing their minds over a flag, the rise of Endrick, William Saliba, bits and bobs with the German national team, some cool watch list picks, and of course a handbook history bonanza. Just a note, I have a new microphone, which I hope sounds pretty good right now, but that's because I remembered I have a little device to help me cope with the echo in my room, which I forgot to set up for this podcast recording, so it does sound a little bit roomy, but hopefully it's not too bad. All right, on with the show. Good morning, everyone. I'm Tom Curran, and it's Tuesday, the 26th of March. It was sunny in London for a little while, but it has returned to grey, which matches the national mood. Because everywhere I go, every street I walk, and every shop I visit, people are talking, complaining about the same thing. There's purple in our flag now. We're so angry about this here at Scouted, I've assembled a team of proud patriots to complain about it. First up, here to save God Save the King in its entirety, it's Phil Costa.
Hello. I mean, I could maybe name you the first two words of the national anthem and then I would be struggling. But hey, you know, if that's what you need me to do, I'm willing to die for the cause. So
I've decided my thing with introducing you is just to put you on the spot very awkwardly every time.
So yeah. First it was the Spanish. Now it was the national anthem. No, it's nice. Nice to be back on. Haven't chatted with you guys in a while. So ready to dive in.
Truly a professional podcast host now, but we will get onto that later, Philip. Also with me today, he is the supreme leader of the Make Australia Great Again Committee. It's Stephen Gnarvis.
I like how you brought someone who's run away from England and someone who's not even English to talk about England's flag shenanigans that who cares? Who cares?
I was going to go much more explicit in the intro about your nationalities, but I decided I'm scared of the gammon and what they'll say about me. Boys, let's get straight into the patriotism. England lost to Brazil. But I want to start with the flag because, as Stephen said, he's very excited about all this discourse that's happening. So I only have one question on this, really. If you could change one thing about your club or country's badge to cause maximum carnage, what would you do?
I think Juventus already managed to do exactly that. So probably nothing.
You don't like the J. How do you feel about the J?
Neither here nor there, to be honest. But I don't know. I think it's the thing that I think doesn't hit with it is it's just it seems so forced in that it's trying to turn the club into something that it's not, which is a bit jarring, I think, for people, especially people that have been fans for, you know, a long, long, long time, longer than how old I am. And then you see this weird J thing pop up. You're probably going, what's going on here? So, yeah, not the biggest fan.
What's the Socceroos badge?
Australian coat of arms with the kangaroo and the emu flanking
you could do
a shield.
Some damage there.
You could do lots of things that would annoy people in the same way that the purple flag annoys some Englanders, but I don't think I want to list them really. I don't want the clap back.
No. Phil, do you have any alterations you make?
Not particularly. I would just make sure that everything is done on word art. like me in year four making my weekly school projects in ICT.
Graphic design is my passion, kind of.
That is it. If whoever made that meme could design the England badge, just please step forward. I would be willing to sponsor you, but not pay you.
Or change the Arsenal text in the logo to Comic Sans instead of whatever font it is now.
We're not a joke anymore, Steve. Don't worry. But actually, speaking of, we need to go back to our pre-modernized badge as well. That one with the cannon on it was beautiful. Well, I know it's got a cannon now, but I loved the kind of the 90s Adidas vibe to our style.
I'd love to do a year where every Premier League club has to go back to their previous badge. I think that would be cool.
just a proper retro year.
In saying that, just to bring some Australian knowledge, the AFL used to do, the Australian Football League for Aussie rules, used to do a retro round every year where all the clubs used to bring out some like old reheated kit from like the 90s or 80s or 2000s and wear that. And everyone used to love it and they got rid of it for some reason. But that would be interesting to see in the Premier League. Everyone gets a week where they get an old unique design from the past that was a fan favorite and bring it back.
I never thought I'd say this, but I think the Premier League has some learning to do from Aussie rules. For me, boys, from on the international scene, I think it'd be really great if, in the spirit of international cooperation, we all had a tournament where we have to wear another country's flag. I think that would be great. You could have old friends like England wearing France, or England wearing Ireland, or England wearing Scotland.
You're going to start some sort of war in doing this, so I think it might not be the best idea.
All right, let's move on. We'll talk actually about the football, even though none of us really watched any football this weekend. To my knowledge, when you work in football, it's quite nice over the international break to go outside and do other things. To that end, I want to talk briefly about the England team with my proud Englishman here. Kobbie Mainoo started. No, sorry, he didn't. He came off the bench for his debut. Mm-hmm. Trent Alexander-Arnold not in the squad. What I'm trying to get at is there are a few things that Southgate is trying to iron out before the tournament begins. So I thought it'd be fun to very briefly, I guess, front to back, Phil, run through our ideal starting 11 in the summer. Because mm-hmm. Lots of people are doing this nowadays and everyone has a different answer. So I'm curious what your answer is.
Ooh, okay. I think I've got mine. I think I have my 11. Shall I start?
Please do.
Right. I'm going to be a bit of a neek here and say that it does involve an inverted fullback. But that's what 4 years of Arteta ball will do to you. I'm going to go Jordan Pickford in goal. Then my two, well, it's a back three. It's going to be a back three. With Kyle Walker as the right centre back, John Stones as the middle centre back, and then Jared Branthwaite as the left centre back. And then I'll have Rice in midfield with Trent like coming in. So he would be like an inverted fullback playing at central midfield. Kind of Rice can run around him, Trent can do the damage with the ball. Then further forward, Mr. Jude Bellingham, I think. Although I wasn't totally convinced about him in that that number 10 role. I feel like we've made a bit of a mistake profiling him as a number 10. I'm not sure if that was through necessity or what, but for me, he's like a box-to-box guy and we kind of just gave him the ball on the edge of the box and we're like, do something. And he's not really that guy. So I would have him kind of, as a box-to-box. This is the issue. The next one in midfield. I've debated this. Oh, now I'm not sure. Looking at my team, Jordan Henderson.
What are the options?
No, I'm joking. I was tempted to go Curtis Jones. I think he's had a really good season, and I think having that kind of box midfield would give you a nice blend of attributes. And then I would have Rashford left, Saka right, Kane up front.
Rashford left. Interesting.
I think he works for England. I don't see anybody else, to be honest.
Mm. Couple of things I want to pick up on. Which side is Trent inverting from? You got Kyle Walker in there as well.
Yeah, but Kyle Walker would be kind of a right centre back. He's played there before. He'll be fine. It's his last tournament.
You've got full Arteta ball with Branthwaite at left back.
I've just gone with who I think are the best players. I don't want Harry Maguire anywhere near this team. I don't want Ben Chilwell anywhere near this team. I don't want Conor Gallagher anywhere near this team. I think Luke Shaw's the only debatable one, but I'm not sure on if he'll be fit or not. So that's why I've gone with Branthwaite, because I think he can play in that position. It's too early for Levi Colwill. I don't really see anybody else Lewis Dunk. So yeah, that's my team. That's my team.
Do you know who you've left out that's going to make people very upset? And
Foden?
Yeah, Phil Foden.
I just think that midfield needs a bit more two-wayness.
Mm.
And that's why I've gone with Jones, because I think he can do both.
Stephen, you've been nodding along. What are your thoughts?
I was kind of just thinking it up on the fly. I kind of like, if you're going to go with the same structure, which I think kind of suits if you want to play Trent, which why wouldn't you? Kind of think something similar. I'd maybe even think, like, obviously if you weren't Southgate and you hadn't like made him not want to play, you could play Ben White possibly in the Branthwaite role. It's kind of different to what he plays at Arsenal, but I still think he can play that like wide center back role pretty effectively. Then Rice and someone as like a midfield pairing with then Trent coming in. What are we up to? That's 7 outfielders and we need 3 more. Unless you just play, Rice at the base with Trent coming in to support him. And then you have, Rashford, Saka, Bellingham, Kane. Yeah, I think you really need to maximize that Bellingham role though, especially the way Kane likes to drop and Bellingham likes to push on. I think you can make that partnership work really well if you get the dynamic going. But Bellingham, he needs to be pushing up the pitch. I don't know why anyone seeing the way he plays for Real Madrid would want to be like pushing him away from the box, because we've seen what he's done this season. He just scores a ridiculous amount of goals when he gets anywhere near the box, when he gets driving forward, when there's space for him to attack, and with Kane kind of dropping into the pockets as he tends to do with England. Like we saw the Euro final in 2021, like he was getting the ball at like halfway and waiting for others to make runs and pinging them all over the place. And you think if you've got someone like Bellingham pushing on, making the kind of runs he does at Real Madrid, that could be a pretty effective duo. And then obviously with someone like Saka, you've got the wide outlet. With Rashford, you've got the wide outlet. With Saka, you've got a bit of everything, creativity, solid midfield duo in terms of creativity and control with Rice and Trent Alexander-Arnold. And then your other defenders that is, a super solid defensive unit that really works in that back three setup with the two wide center backs with Walker and Ben White. So I think the only like guarantee is that Gareth Southgate is like kind of bottling a really solid generation of England players, and I think England are just lucky that they're all pretty young and will survive until whoever comes in next.
Yeah, you say that, but I think we've just proven it's not as simple as it looks to put the perfect 11 on the field. I think I know lots of people are going to be doing
this. Yeah, but just wait. It's not just like the players that you have out there as well. It's like utilization. If you've got Bellingham out there and you're playing him like a million meters away from goal, then like you might have the best player on the field, but you're not maximizing what he can do. So you're kind of just wasting everyone's time.
Fair. Look, whatever we think about Gareth Southgate, I know we're going to be doing a lot of international preparation stuff up to the European Championships this summer. So this will not be the last time we talk about this kind of thing. I just find it kind of interesting to talk about England for the first time in a while, because I think it's the first tournament where we don't actually know what the starting 11 will be on the opening day. And of course, there's a few other sub-narratives running around with it being Gareth's last tournament, most probably, and us as arguably joint favourites if we can, manage to get Trent on the pitch somehow. Obviously, England lost, and there was another team involved in that loss, and that was Brazil. Phil Costa, you spend a decent amount of time in Brazil looking up their young stars, of which they have many. And it's another interesting national team to talk about, because as the Neymar star falls from the sky in this graceful or not graceful manner, a bunch of other stars are just like flying up to meet it. And I think one such name that maybe people with a Eurocentric view on football will be maybe passingly familiar with, but will have now seen score on the biggest stage, is Endrick.
Mm-hmm.
As a kind of casual follower of this stuff who absorbs most of it through you, what I know about Endrick is that he's been doing lots of photo shoots and stuff. And he seems to have this, quite strange connection to heritage in the past, in that you can tell me if this is correct or not, but to my eyes, it seems like he's being almost curated to be a Pelé type figure. Is this right? And then at Wembley over the weekend, he was talking a lot about Bobby Charlton, I think, and stuff. And mm-hmm. It just seems to be this recurring motif with him. So, what's going on with all that?
I think we underestimate how much Brazilians need to plan their careers to make it. If you're lucky enough to have that sort of talent, you have to have a plan. And we've seen it before with so many players coming out of Brazil, even Gabriel Martinelli. There was like a 10-step plan about how he was going to get into European football and where he needed to go and when. With Endrick, it does feel a bit like he's the first AI-generated footballer because he's just saying all the right things. He's talking about Bobby Charlton. He's learned English. He's learned Spanish. He's just ticking every box to kind of make it wherever he needs to make it. But there is a wonderful kind of vintageness to him as well, the way he turns up to Brazil camps and what he's wearing and how he manages to get these pictures looking so good. And it's like a Pelé. It's like Pelé, wearing polo shirts and chains, and it's just amazing. And if you showed me him, I just said that guy's going to be a star because he looks to have it. But also he's a really, really good player. And to score at Wembley, I know the goal itself was a bit scrappy, but to score at Wembley as a 17-year-old is quite special, really. And I do have some concerns about how people are talking about him. I'm still not sure about what his level is, or his potential, shall I say, his ceiling. I think he's a really good player, but I'm not sure what his ceiling is at the moment. I do worry about him physically. His body just seems to be huge at the moment, and not in like an overweight way. I just think he's a massive guy who hasn't really grown yet. Got, you know, Roberto Carlos thighs, he's big and chunky. And, you know, as somebody who had a big growth spurt late into their teens, I hope he has, you know, something similar. But yeah, just really, really cool. He is the next star, really, that they're trying to mold and shape. Because Brazil needs somebody like that. And I think Vinicius has kind of taken that on a little bit. But in terms of pure star potential, he is the next one, basically.
So 70 million euros or somewhere thereabouts to Real Madrid, that's going to be take effect this summer. What do you see as the next kind of year or so of his development? Is he ready to step straight into a team that already has Vinny and Bellingham and Rodrigo? What do you think is going to happen?
I don't think he'll drop down into the Castilla like Vinicius did. I think he'll come straight into the side. I'm not sure whether he will be ready to play every game, and nor should he be. I think that would just be a ridiculous ask of somebody so young. Plus, like you said, Vinicius is there, Rodrigo's there, Bellingham's there, Mbappe is going to be there. So they can kind of bring him in without just creating this ridiculous sense of stardom, and he can kind of develop at his own pace. But it's very clear that he is ready for some responsibility, having played for one of the biggest clubs in Brazil, in Palmeiras, and has done incredible things for them already. So the jump is always a big one. It's difficult to judge and difficult to measure, but I'm excited to see him because I think he's absolutely got the talent. It's just, can he reach that Neymar level is the question.
It's really fascinating how Madrid find, not, you know, that they're still doing the Galactico thing in essence without maybe going for the 26, 27 peak era players. But they still seem to find players who you just know are going to be iconic, you know, like Vinny Jr., Bellingham, Endrick. You can see these guys in Pepsi adverts for the next 10 years kind of thing.
I think that relates to their aura as well, though. They kind of maintain this image and story. And even if they aren't pushing the Galactico narrative anymore, they still have that feeling and that vibe. You know, even in Europe, you see it in the Champions League. They just have this kind of aura around them. And that's appealing for young players, right? So if they give them the right package, the right development plan, why wouldn't you be tempted to go to Real Madrid? So They need to hold up their own reputation to get these guys, but they're doing it really well.
Stephen, would you be tempted to go to Real Madrid?
Absolutely. It seems like in most cases they have a pretty good plan in place for when these guys come over. I think they probably learned a little bit from the Ødegaard situation, and it probably just took them a little too long to kind of get him going. But with Vinicius, they managed him a lot better.
Ødegaard was 15, to be fair.
Yeah, but they kind of messed him around with, like, it seems like they maybe promised him a little bit too much too quickly. And then when it all kind of happened, they were a little bit too slow, and then farming him out on maybe too many loans, or the loans weren't quite at the level that Ødegaard was up to. But yeah, with Rodrigo and with Vinicius, they've been the complete opposite, and they've managed to bring them into the fold pretty quickly. But at the end of the day, like, it's not like they're plucking unknown names out. They're spending big money on them, but they identify what they want. They identify it early. They've got the cachet, I guess, to beat out other clubs from, you know, the other big clubs in Europe. I'm sure there would have been heaps of other teams that were trying to get Endrick, but the Real Madrid name carries huge amount of weight. And I guess I think that's what the Vinicius and the Rodrigo situation is really important, is being able to show that you can create a pathway, then brings extra incentive to the next player that you want to bring in to come and see, follow in the footsteps of Vinicius and become a big time first team at Real Madrid. I think that's really important.
All right, we'll move on, boys, to the second kind of Clash of the Titans friendly, and that is Germany 2, France 0. Germany scored after 7 seconds with a just unbelievably satisfying goal. Was it Florian Wirtz? I can't remember.
Yeah, it was.
And then Kai Havertz scored early into the second half because Kai Havertz scores again. That's what he does. So, Stephen, I'm going to tell you how my brain works, and you're going to tell me why I'm wrong. Okay, so in my head, I can see very easily that teams like France, teams like England have a ton of young players right on the fringes of the squad who are essentially going to be disappointed to be left out. And it's very easy to see where a refresh of this team is coming from. Now, aside from maybe Jamal Musiala, Florian Wirtz, and a handful of others, I don't see that for Germany. So my question is, how are they doing at youth level? And why, if I'm wrong, am I wrong?
I wouldn't say necessarily that they're doing something wrong. They did win the under 17 World Cup and under 17 Euros last year. So they're clearly creating.
No, why am I wrong? Not them.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying. You're wrong. They're still partly wrong. At least they're still creating good players. I think sometimes national teams can just go through kind of barren runs. Not that they're not creating good players, especially these big national teams. Not that they're not creating top line players, but they're just not quite hitting that top liner. And when you think of, like, Germany were up for a long time, they had a really solid, like, team with Müller, with Kroos, with all these kind of guys who are in a similar age category. And I think they just hit so well on so many of those players. They haven't really got national team experience until a lot of younger guys. And I think that they just hit like a 3-4 year period where there hasn't really been like a star level player. But now you're starting to get into the Wirtzes and the Musialas. I think maybe Adeyemi is someone in that age group that probably hasn't quite kicked on in the way that a lot of people expected him to after he left Salzburg. And I don't think he was even in this squad. Probably Havertz in that run is probably the best player, or the player that's playing a most consistent role for the national team. So I think that's will be good. I think when you look at the team, I think now with Kroos back, if they can carry him as a guy that can barely run anymore, like, there's a lot of firepower with Wirtz and Musiala up front. You got like the two little bees buzzing around doing a heap of stuff. Havertz now in form is like super, super important because they don't have really any number nine depth outside of him. And Gundogan, he's still producing at a top level. So there's like the nexus of a really, really good attack. Kimmich going out back to right back, I think. I think the wing backs is like a tough area for them as well. But like, I think Bayer Leverkusen as well, having such a good season, gives them more options. I think in this game, Robert Andrick played, who's had a really strong season, partnering at times with Xhaka in midfield for Leverkusen. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to make of them. I think they're not going to be favorites ahead of the likes of, you know, France and England and Spain, but I think they could maybe be throwing up a few surprises with Nagelsmann as a manager, knowing what he's doing, I guess, compared to potentially some other managers at national team level. I think they'll do okay.
Phil, you're on the ground in Germany. What are the streets saying?
The streets are saying that Florian Wirtz and Jamal Musiala are very good, basically. You know, 20 and 21 years old, the future absolutely is them and will need to be planned around them because they are two incredibly gifted players who are coming into their own. I mean, watching Jamal Musiala is joy. You know, I felt similar to watching Bukayo Saka. These guys just play football in the right way. They're technical. They like to take players on. They're creative, instinctive. They're just wonderful players. Florian Wirtz having an amazing season at Leverkusen. And I don't think it's spoken about enough how well he's done to come back from his ACL injury and just kind of slot back in and not just slot back in, but look even better. So Steve's right. They are a mixture of profiles at the moment. I think, as you said, fullbacks are, it could be an issue for them, but with guys like Toni Kroos, Ilkay Gundogan, even Rudiger kind of being the elder statesman in this squad and then relying on a bit of magic coming off from the bench, they could do something. I think having a center forward like Havertz suits them because they are just a fluid team. And what does Kai Havertz offer you from that central striking position? Fluidity. So they can drift left, Wirtz can come in, Havertz can stay central, and Musiala and Wirtz can swap. You've got Gundogan coming in with third man runs. It's a really exciting team. Toni Kroos is just an amazing player. And I think partnering him with somebody like Andrić is sensible because he does all the running, as Steve said. So I don't know if they can be considered favourites, but there's a quiet confidence that they could do something in this tournament with, let's be honest, an elite manager in Julian Nagelsmann.
Oh, just want to throw in one thing as well on the talent stuff. Keep an eye on the ability for Germany to be able to keep diaspora players. I think it's a really important thing to throw in. They've just had Alexander Pavlovich join the squad for this round of friendlies. He can also play for Serbia, I believe. So that's one that they look like they've locked in, but they've also lost Can Uzun and Kenan Yildiz to Turkey. So especially Yildiz, that's a massive, massive loss, I think, for Germany for the future. And there's going to be, I think there's a fair few more of these players out there that they could potentially lose. So I think that is something to keep an eye on.
Do you know who else I like to keep an eye on? William Saliba, as I know you do too, Phil. Didier Deschamps came out after the game and said some interesting things, something to the effect of William Saliba does many things I don't like. Phil, what could such things be and where do I get whatever substance Mr. Deschamps is on?
Being tall, dark and handsome. Those are the things that he does that Deschamps doesn't like. My large French son, William Saliba. The thing is, this season, I think there have been occasions where he's been below his best, which is still a very high level, just not the perfection we've come to expect from Saliba. But what was that? Sorry, there's like major crashing outside of my house at the moment.
Quite worried it was something else.
I live on a shipyard. Yes. So I can get criticism. You know, I can perfectly understand criticism, but when you're playing Benjamin Pavard and Dayot Upamecano in his place, then that's when the criticism becomes a little bit more open to criticism because they have both stunk this season. well, maybe Pavard has been okay, but Upamecano has been terrible. And every time I watch him, he's making a mistake. He's getting sent off. He's doing something wrong. So I'm not sure. I don't really have a huge issue with it because I'd like him fit and fresh for Arsenal, but I think he deserves more.
Steve, what are any thoughts on France's back four?
No, but I was looking at the team and I just amazes me every time France play that Adrien Rabiot just has a settled starting 11 place every single time they stroll out an 11, which watching him week in, week out at Juventus just baffles me. And also the fact that Theo Hernandez can't get a start over his brother, I think is bizarre considering what he puts out on a weekly basis for Milan. And just the fact that like if him and like, he's good enough with Leao at Milan as a duo on the left wing, you could imagine Mbappe and Teo Hernandez as a duo on the left would just be terrifying. So it's kind of a few, weird selection things, but Deschamps just like screams like a manager that just has his favorites and like struggles to pivot away from them at any moment. Interesting as well to see Zaire Emery in the starting 11 for this game. I'll be quite astonished how quickly he's settled into just being a top liner at club and national team level. Other than that, I think they got to work out who they want to play up front, and they've got to work out the mix of the back four, because he kind of just plays two center backs and two like auxiliary center backs at left and right back. And I just want to see better, because this team is like got so much individual talent, and then just seems like they're noited with the way that they're set up a little bit.
I feel like Deschamps and Gareth Southgate are, two peas in a pod almost, except one of them wins stuff. Until this summer, when both of them will have won stuff.
And one of them, it's because one of them has Mbappe, really, let's be honest.
Yeah. Well, I didn't want to be too kind on England, but yeah, I do think that's a pretty decisive factor. Right, I'm sick of talking about internationals. It's so boring. Everyone's so bored. The real stuff is here, boys and girls. Arsenal are back this weekend. We're at the Emirates. Dear God, help me. Phil, tell me what's going to happen, because I'm terrified.
Well, you're going to be even more terrified because you're at the Etihad. Not the Emirates.
Well, I said the Emirates. My bad. We are in Manchester, yes.
It's a very scary prospect. We are at the business end of the season now, and Arsenal have about 50 games to play in the next month, which will be testing the squad to its limits. So I'm quite glad that we've got players like Thomas Partey, Tomiyasu, Gabriel Jesus, Zinchenko back, because we're going to need them. So look, our record at the Etihad has been terrible in recent seasons. I would be lying if I said I was confident to go there and get 3 points, but I have growing belief in this team that we are serious and capable and deserve to be in this position in a title race. I mean, we're top of the league at the moment, so that says it all. And we just have to go there, and I'm just praying we go there with a fit squad, because we haven't been able to do it in recent years. So, and to really give them a game. I think City do have weaknesses, especially defensively, that we haven't seen much of in the past. And they're still sweating on a couple of injuries. Kyle Walker, look, I guess he'll be fine. It might have just been him feeling something and not wanting to risk it. Akanji pulled out of the Swiss team this morning as well. He'll be fine. So, it's nervy. It's very nervy. And look, losing would not be the end of the world, but it would be extremely difficult to kind of claw back that swing. So I'd be happy with a point, but if we can go for all three, why not?
It's on Easter Sunday, I believe. Mm-hmm. So I will be praying for Kai Saka's knee to have risen from the dead.
Or Jesus,
or Martinelli's foot, or who else has pulled out of a international squad recently? Tomiyasu was left at home. Gabriel, didn't he pull out of Brazil?
Yeah, Gabriel. Gabriel was out of Brazil's squad.
So either these are tactical or we're in big trouble. Stephen, can I interest you in any other Premier League fixture this weekend? A nice Chelsea Burnley, perhaps?
I don't even know what the PL fixtures are, but I think the international break probably came at the best time for Liverpool of anyone, would you say? Like with the injury run that they've had, it feels like they'll probably be getting a few plays back after this break and looking to push on. But I think the run home of the Premier League, there's been so many postponed games that are like kind of top liners that things are going to be happening day to day, week to week, and it's going to go a bit crazy. Liverpool-Brighton though stands out just because they always play fun, high scoring games. Looking across, there's not a whole lot else this week, to be honest.
I will not be watching Liverpool-Brighton because I will be doing marching up and down my street in cold sweats, trying not to pass out. That's due to the Arsenal City game being 4:30 on a Sunday. Why?
You know what's worse? It being 2:30 a.m. on a Monday.
Yeah, well, okay, fair. You can always come back with that, can't you? God damn it. It's always harder for the Australians. Right, boys, we'll fly through our watch list because we're sitting at about 35 minutes, I think. So this is watch list. This is where the boys introduce you guys, the listeners, to any players you might not have on your radar yet, but they think you should have. Stephen, who is your watch this player this week?
Well, we said we haven't watched any international football this week, but I took some time out to watch the Italian under-19s in qualifying for the under-19 Euros this week. And the shining light, the man who stood head and shoulders above the rest, and the man who is now in the Ineos Manchester United pipeline, is Simone Pafundi, who just moved from Udinese to Lausanne in Switzerland, which is part of the Ineos network, on loan with option to buy. And if he plays like this, I can see them taking up that option to buy, not that they can afford it, but filtering him up through the network very, very quickly. He's playing week in, week out in Switzerland, and he, in these two games for Italy, and they're playing their third, I think, later on today, he was just absolutely outrageous. Technical level, just ridiculous. I posted a couple of clips on him on Twitter during the game they played against Scotland, and he's just whizzing through like five guys at the ball, like not leaving his foot by anything more than like a couple of centimeters at any moment in time. He scores goals. He's playing these gorgeous through balls to assist. He's very, very small, but in terms of like the technical goal scoring, ball striking, creative, he's got all of that unlocked. So I think he's one to look out for with a really, really big future. Because yeah, looking at him so far in the last year or two playing at underage level for Italy, he's been ridiculous. He also played under 20 World Cup last year and was a very important player in that team that made the final, playing up a couple of years. So yeah, he's one that's kind of predestined within the Italian youth setup to hit the big time.
What position does he play? Sorry, did he say?
He is generally kind of attacking midfielder, winger type, more through the middle.
Beautiful. All right, Philip, do you have one or shall I move on and cut this out?
No, I can talk about one quickly. Enzo Milo. He's an attacking midfielder from Stuttgart. He is someone who's been on my radar a little bit this season. Stuttgart have so many players who are playing well. I think especially their strikers, Guirassy and Dennis Undav, have been amazing and scoring goals where people maybe wouldn't have expected them to do so. But he's been bubbling under the radar a little bit. Five goals, two assists. But I just love these kind of players. He's an attacking midfielder, really smart, really creative, likes to be on the ball, likes to create chances. But he's also got some industry in his game as well, which I think you need in the modern game. And they picked him up for really cheap from Monaco. I think it was less than 2 million euros. He's developing through the French teams. You know, he's been through under 16, under 17, under 18, and he's recently been playing for the under 23s. Played really well. So yeah, Thierry Henry likes him, and that's about as good as a recommendation or a reference I can give you. So let's see how he develops, but I think there's something there for sure.
Beautiful. You know what else Thierry Henry would enjoy?
Kate Abdo.
Oh no, the fact that we're talking about, I'm gonna leave your bit in there and I'm gonna cut myself out because it was a much better joke. Yes. Kate Abdo, obscure young French players, and scoutednotebook.com. That's Thierry Henry's wish list. If you enjoy those little bite-sized watch list summaries, the best place to learn about even more players that the boys have been watching is scoutednotebook.com. Stephen, you mentioned Kenan Yildiz earlier, and I believe last time we recorded, you were in the closing stages of writing a Scouted 50 profile on Yildiz. That's now out. Little summary to taste people, to whet people's appetites. Is that the right phrase? Yes.
That is the right phrase. Yildiz, I think he is in a situation that I would dub maybe the reverse Bellingham. Bellingham struggles a bit more when you play him further away from goal and you don't maximize the athleticism and his ability to attack the box in that way. And the way Yildiz is utilized at Juventus is played far too high up the pitch, where he is exposed for that lack of athleticism at his age and does not maximize the ridiculous technical quality that he possesses and starves him of the ball that he needs to impact games. So I've gone through all that kind of stuff, the art of utilization, how important it is not just to be playing young players, but to be playing them in roles that maximize their strengths. But in terms of what he does bring to the table, just an elite technician, ability to play under all sorts of levels of pressure and evade it and create things. Really, really good passer. Just a perfect player, I think, to play a little bit deeper and more in a midfield role at this stage of his career. Get him a bit further away from the trenches that basically any top European nine needs to function in at the moment, and wait and see if maybe he develops the physical weapons to play more as a attacking player, or whether he will just suit being a creative midfield player more in the future. But he's been, even out of position, I think, at Juventus, had a really, really strong first season at senior level so far. And I think there's a lot more to come for him.
And who have you got your eyes on next, writing-wise, Scout 50-wise?
Yes, I am doing another Serie A profile, because why not? And I will be writing about Michael Coyote at Fiorentina, who a lot of the FM players out there will be very, very aware of. First got my eyes on him early last year, watching him in under 19 Euros qualifying before he was part of the Italy team that won that tournament, and was really, really excited to see him come straight into the Fiorentina team. And he's been starting regularly for them this season, which tells you a lot about how athletically ready he was. But I think the surprising thing for me is just seeing his technical development, even over such a short space of time. He kind of looked a bit clunky when I first saw him in Euro qualifying, but then seeing him come into the Fiorentina team and also seeing him at the under 19 Euros, he seemed to have really been working on that side of his game and getting more confidence. And then as a lockdown defender this season, there was one game in particular playing on Kvaratskhelia for Napoli, and he completely locked him down 1v1. And that's really his main skill, is being that lockdown right back, but brings some weapons to his game offensively that lockdown fullbacks aren't typically known for. So a really exciting one, and looking forward to writing it up.
To get that, that's scoutednotebook.com. It will drop right into your inbox if you are a free or paid subscriber. Well, you have to be paid to read it. You know what you can't find on scoutednotebook.com, and that is Phil Costa's brand new podcast. Philip, congratulations on the launch. Congratulations on immediately proving you're better at this than I am. Stephen, get your knee out of the camera. No one wants to see that. that's in the middle of your promo now, Phil. You're welcome. You want to tell us a little bit about it? How did you become such an overnight success? Please tell us.
Yeah, I mean, it's been a bit ridiculous, really. I was going to say those who know me know that I contribute to the Arsenal Vision podcast, but I'm not sure if anybody from Scouted knows that I go on that podcast. But I do go on the Arsenal Vision podcast, and they were presented with an opportunity to host a more general football podcast away from the Arsenal sphere. And I was put forward to do just that. And yeah, a lot of work behind the scenes has gone into this, and, you know, deciding artwork, music, getting socials set up, getting schedules set up, script writing, getting guests sorted. It's a really difficult thing to do that people may not realize. And we finally launched the first episode last week. It came out with Julien Laurent. And he was talking about all things PSG, basically. And it was a really good chat, a great episode. And we were fortunate enough to kind of jump into ridiculous positions in the podcast chart. We were second in the US for soccer, and third in the UK for football, overtaking Gary Neville and the Overlap crew. So they're going to have to hold that, I'm afraid. This week, we've got an episode coming out about Athletic Club. So yeah, I mean, it's just been amazing, and I'm really enjoying it. So hopefully we can maintain that level, and I'm just really lucky to be doing it, basically.
Yeah, no, it's just sincere congrats, mate. It's always great to see the Scouted boys winning. Although we are going to have to enter into a bit of friendly competition now. And if anyone's listening who has any ways to boost this podcast ahead of Phil's, please get in touch. The show's called Football Vision, right? Phil?
Yes, Football Vision. Yep.
So just Google that wherever you find your podcast, and I'm sure it will pop up at the top of the charts. Again, I need to stop saying that before I get angry. A couple of notes from me, notebook-wise, last week. No, sorry. This week coming, I will have a technical area blog going up, which is my kind of run through of what it's like to run a small media company in 2024, a media company that's being built with the support of our readers, listeners, and is writer owned. I'm probably going to be going through some of our goals for the next few months in terms of paid subscribers over on Notebook. And I just generally kind of talk about the industry, our position in it, and why it's so grim to be a writer in 2024 trying to make a living. But it's I've made it sound terrible. Go and read it if you like. Also, I want to shout out Joe's other show, the show that has much more preparation put into it than what we do for this. He is doing an interview series at the moment with a number of high profile people from the world of scouting, recruitment, performance analysis, those kind of people. So he kicked things off with Paul Tisdale last week. And this week he had the ex-performance director from Marseille, Mathieu Bouchapillon. I'm so cultured. And they talk the kind of role of analytics and data in player recruitment and development at one of France's biggest clubs. So that's be on the same feed as this. You've probably seen it in your inbox, but if you haven't listened, go and check it out. All right. If there's nothing else, boys, I think we move on to the greatest game show we've ever created in the history of the world.
I'm ready.
I'm so ready. Ready.
Great. When actually not ready because before
we need our buzzers.
Ask you to pull buzzers up. So we'll be back in 2 minutes when Steve's been through all the dodgy noises. All right, we are back. We've been fiddling around with the soundboard and we have chosen our buzzers for this week. Phil Costa, please play your buzzer.
Yep, I've gone for the anime. Wow.
Beautiful. Stephen, please play your buzzer.
Bit of GTA inspiration.
Oh, that's beautiful. The production quality on this podcast, you just don't get it on Football Vision, do you?
It's authentic. It's authentic.
You need to bust this out with Julian Laurent like next time. All right, this is the simple game of guess the player. Well, it's called Handbook History, and all the boys need to do is guess which player I'm referring to from the 600-plus players that we've profiled in our 10 years of Handbook History. I will read out clues in three separate rounds. If you get it in round one, you get 3 points. If you get it in round two, you get 2 points. And if you get it in round three, you get 1 point, as the clues will go from more obscure, hopefully, if I've done my job right, to less obscure and more obvious. All right, let's get started, boys. Are we ready for player number one?
So ready.
Ready.
Fingers on your buzzers. You only get, remember, another rule, you only get one guess per round or pass. Okay, I'm going to introduce passing so there's no, you know, waiting for 5 minutes. All right, anyway, player number one, clue number one. This player was promoted to the senior team from his childhood club at the age of just 17. Clue two, over a 10-year senior career, he has only ever played in one league. Clue three, despite playing in European competition for seven of those 10 years, he has just 11 Champions League appearances.
What an L.
You can pass or you can guess. There's no penalty for getting it wrong.
Pass.
Yeah, I need to pass as well.
All right, on to round two. In 2015, he got in a spot of bother with his club's fans for posing for a photo in the kit of their city rivals. Oh, I can see the brains going here. Got to remember that story. That was a big story, probably. I don't know. I don't remember. I just read about it. Okay. Clue two. Since 2020, he has made one international appearance. in a 2-0 win against Malta.
He sounds Italian.
Clue three. He has won his domestic league and domestic trophy. So, you know, I don't know, knockout thing. Once each.
Right.
If you need me to repeat any clues, I can do so. Otherwise, guess or pass.
What year did you say he wore the shirt? 2015?
2015, yeah.
Oh, God, that's going way back.
It's handbook history.
Should I just take a guess? Should I just take a guess? All right, let's take a guess. I'm going Steven. To guess Roberto Gagliardini.
Incorrect. But thank you for announcing the buzzer before you played it, just to prepare everyone for the abuse there is we're about to take.
All right, I'm going to throw a guess as well.
Okay.
Is it Jeffrey Kondogbia?
I think that's the second time you've guessed Jeffrey Kondogbia in Hamburg history.
I will continue to do so until... Yeah.
No, but he hasn't played in the same league. He's played in like three different leagues.
Yeah, you're going to need to keep guessing Jeffrey Kondogbia, I'm afraid, because...
Look, one day it's going to be right, him. and then you'll be happy. I've said it.
These clues are extremely tough, holy.
I have to go tough. All right. And actually, I think when... I think when you find out who it's going to be, who it is, you'll probably be annoyed at yourself. All right, ready? Fingers on buzzers here, okay? Whichever buzzer I hear first, I'm going to go with. All right, mm-hmm. No announcing your buzzers. In 2020-2021 season, he lost his place to an emerging Fikayo Tomori. Phil Costa.
Romagnoli?
It's Alessio Romagnoli, correct. Ooh, Phil Costa
well played.
On the Serie A question.
Was it? Did he wear a Lazio shirt or something?
Because he was a Lazio fan growing up.
Nice.
He played in Roma's youth academy. Oh, no, he did play in Milan's youth academy, I think, if I remember correctly, and moved to Roma at a young age.
Not sure. Can't remember, even though
he fell off. He was supposed to be like the next guy, wasn't he?
He was, according to the writer of this profile, who is sitting in front of us, Phil. Stephen, you authored this, and you did not remember.
Oh, good. He was at Milan before he went to Roma, by the way.
Anyway, all right, that's an L.
Happy with that.
That's an L.
Well done. 1 point to Phil Costa. All right, we'll move on to player number two, Stephen. You got a lot of catching up to do, my son. Round one. Clue one. He performed on trial for FC Barcelona when he was 11 years old and was offered a place at the academy. Clue two. During his debut senior league season at the age of 17, he ranked third amongst all players in his league for total distance run. So it's quite an athlete.
This is niche stuff here.
At senior level, he has played for four clubs in four different countries.
Offered a trial at Barcelona. Someone Brazilian. That's what I'm going for.
Okay.
But we don't get penalized for guesses, right?
No, but you can only do it once.
Okay. Oh, goodness me. I've got a few players in mind, but I think I might have to pass.
Okay. Stephen?
Yeah, I'll pass as well.
Right. We're on to round two, boys. 2 points up for offer. Trying something new with the clues here. I'm going to give you his current transfer market value. It's 30 million euros. Okay. Next, I'm going to give you a quote from the profile. He is an extremely versatile player. Tactical versatility is relatively common amongst players of his heritage as they receive a high level of tactical coaching from an early age. Phil Costa.
Is it Takahiro Tomiyasu?
Well done, my friend. It's Takahiro.
Man, I was thinking about him for the first round. I should have gone with it.
And you've done the clean sweep. Wait, I should have gone with it. Not bad.
Disgusting.
Not bad.
That is a terrible one to pick when Phil's in the.
I gave you Romagnoli for the first
question. Well, I don't care about Romagnoli. Play for Roma and Lazio.
You wrote about him. You called in the next Bonucci.
Hey, he's pretty good. He's a good senior level player.
I had Tomiyasu in mind for the first round and I didn't go with it. I should have just guessed, but I didn't want to give a potential hint away.
Yeah. So obviously I was a bit tricky with that first clue. I said he was offered a place at Barcelona's academy, which is true, but he did not take it.
Yeah.
He couldn't relocate.
I thought Tomiyasu's only played in three, Belgium, Italy and England.
And Japan.
Oh, yeah.
Four clubs in four countries.
That was why I hesitated.
Yeah. Well, no worries. You got there in the end. And
I should have had three.
That's England 1, Australia 0.
What a scrumptious dub.
To round off our patriotic episode. Boys, thanks so much for being here. And to everyone listening who listens this far to hear this anime noises and Stephen's questionable taste in memes, thanks so much. Phil, what do you have to say on your victorious return to the podcast?
No, very happy. I'll be gracious in victory. I wish we could do an hour of just handbook history, to be quite honest, but...
it's coming.
That needs to be an event. You know how Opta and Football Manager do all those live events? We just need to do like a quiz about handbook history. And
oh, we're cooking, baby. Don't worry.
Let him cook. Enjoyed that. Thanks, mate. And a big GG to Steve for those points.
Steven, you loser.
Yeah. It was a solid week last week, but I'll walk back to bed with the tail between my legs after that gigantic L.
Yeah, I think Joe Donahue comes out of this worse, actually, because you stomped him last week. All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening so much. ScoutedNotebook.com. Go give us money, please, and thank you.